All right, this morning, new CNN polling shows that most Americans think home ownership is a dream that might never come true. Many Americans who do not own a home right now say they do not think they will ever be able to afford one.
Well, that's a CNN report, obviously, from John Berman talking about the American dream, which is supposed to be, you know, your own three-bed, two-bathroom house, two-and-a-half kids, or whatever the whole thing is. It's becoming less and less affordable, and Americans, in a bipartisan, tripartisan, whatever way, are understanding that what used to look like that American dream, it is less attainable. Now the question is, of course, for the politicians running to be the president of the United States, how do you make the case that they have the best policies and the other guy has the problematic policies? Let's talk to Steve Moore. He's a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation. He's also an economic advisor for former President Donald Trump. Steve, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you.
Hi, Annie. Good to be with you. And by the way, if you look at those rent, those mortgage payments, I think you may make a very good point that, mortgage payments on a median value home when Trump was president was, somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,200, $1,300 a month, depending on where you live. Now it's over $2,000 a month, in some cases, $2,500 a month. So in many areas, the cost of buying a new home in terms of your monthly payments is going to be twice as high as it was. And so this is pricing a lot of young people in their late 20s and 30s, we're just starting to think about buying their own home and starting a family. They can't afford it. And then meanwhile, rents are way up as well. So this is one of the areas where the consumer price index, inflation number doesn't really pick up the extent to which you're paying so much more for housing. And as you said, this is the American dream, and it's sad, the mortgage rate was 3% when Trump left office. It reached 7%. It's coming down a little bit, but it's still really high compared to where it was. And that's a tragedy for people. If you're a husband and wife with maybe one or two kids, it's just very difficult to be able to afford a home.
Yeah. And to think many of these people who are trying to do this, they have dual incomes, which that didn't always used to be the case either. And we hear from the administration about how incomes are up, household income is up. But if everything costs more than the income is up, that doesn't shake out in the favor of the taxpayer.
Well, that's right. So the official number as of June was that the average household, in America has lost about $2,000 to $2,500 in purchasing power a year. And that's a lot. That means, to put it very plainly, if you're a middle-class family, you're poorer today on average than you were when Trump was president. And that's quite an indictment.
Mm. We're speaking with Steve Moore about the economy right now. I mean, I guess you could say this is Biden's economy. Maybe it's not Kamala Harris's economy. What is she going to do to make this better for American citizens?
Well, we had an item in our hotline today. I hope people are getting that, by the way. Just go to unleashprosperity.com and you can get it for free. But we noted that, two of the biggest spending bills of all time, the Inflation Reduction Act, so-called Inflation Reduction Act, and the, Build Back Better bill, whatever that thing was, with $3 trillion price tag, that's over $3 trillion of new spending that happened with Kamala Harris's tie-breaking vote in the Senate. Because remember, Annie, if you get a tie in the Senate, who breaks the tie.
Yeah. Future J.D. Vance.
Exactly. Can't wait for that to happen. Yeah. So she broke both of those ties voting for these things. I'm a little surprised, by the way. I mean, if I were running Kamala's campaign, which obviously I'm not, I try to distance myself from Biden's policies. Instead, she's running around the country acting like it's been some kind of smashing success and she's going to double down on it. And she will. And in fact, I was asked on Fox News on Saturday, do you think this is going to be more of the same under Kamala Harris? I said, no, it's going to be more to the worse because she's for the Green New Deal. She's for, she's for getting rid of private health insurance and just having everybody in a government plan. And so the government runs the health market. And then she's also for getting rid of right to work. So if you are working and you're in a and you've got a union running a facility, you would have to pay union dues and join the union whether you wanted to or not, which to me is just un-American.
Steve, when you're talking about, I wanted to pin down that healthcare thing. If you're just dipping your toe in politics, it's an election year. Some people won't start paying attention. I don't know how they manage this until September, October. Yeah. And you hear Kamala Harris and she says, I think everybody should have health care. I don't think anybody should be turned away. That sounds really nice, Steve. Why would you be opposed to everybody having access to health care?
Well, pretty much everybody does. I mean, if you go to an emergency room and you have a problem, you know, you have an injury, they're not going to not treat you. So we have de facto, you know, universal coverage. It's just, do you want the good coverage? You know, I mean, look, Cuba has universal health coverage. Do you think it's good care?
No. I mean, I
give
feel,
you an aspirin. Yeah. In the hospital, they give you an aspirin and say, there's your health care.
So you're saying that provided health care by the government doesn't mean good health care, but it does become a political talking point to get you across the finish line on Election Day.
Well, it does. And, you know, they're going to. But look, I think the American people, most of us like the health care. Remember when Obama ran for president with Obamacare and he said, if you like the health care you've got, you get to keep it.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
That famous line?
That didn't happen.
Now the Democrat, now Kamala's saying, I don't care if you like your health care or not. I don't care if you like your doctor. I don't care if you like your hospital. You're going to do we're going to go where we tell you to go.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like what Americans want.
Yeah. That sounds like what happens when you trade freedom for government provided security.
That's exactly right.
Yep. When I'm going to give you an opportunity to talk about Trump's plan, because we're talking about housing, talking about health care, all of these things that the government has gotten involved in. It makes it harder for Americans to live and have those American dreams that they determine what they are. What does the Trump administration do to get housing more affordable?
Well, you get inflation down. You know, the inflation was 1.5% when Trump was president. We need to build more housing in this country, get rid of a lot of the log jams against building housing. And, you know, you got to have higher wages. You know, the thing is, people had a big increase in their income under Trump because of our pro-growth policy. So guess what? They could afford to buy a new home or a better home. So you had a booming housing market when Trump was president. But Biden, because he's made everybody poorer, everybody has to, instead of, you know, moving up in terms of the quality of your housing, you now have to move down the scale because you just can't afford as much as you used to. So I guarantee you when Trump gets in, we're going to get inflation, you know, back down to, you know, 1-2%.
How do you do that?
He's going to fly out of that. What?
How do you do that?
First of all, you got to just cancel a lot of this idiotic spending that's going on. There's $300 billion they want to waste on green energy programs that don't work. They still want to spend $100 billion on COVID. I mean, last time I checked, COVID was pretty much over. I mean, there is some COVID strains, but it's just like getting, you know, a mild version of the flu. You know, so there's so many things. We could get rid of so many programs that have been around for 100 years that don't do anything anymore. Do you know only 6% of the federal employees in Washington today, only 6% are coming into the office full time?
What? Six?
6%. 6%.
Gosh, I'm in the wrong line of work.
No, they're just dialing it in. And they're, you know, working 20, 25 hours a week, maybe. And they're pulling down $150,000, $160,000 a year.
That's outrageous.
It's the biggest scam ever. Yeah, we could easily cut. Well, I would start with 25 or 30% of the federal workforce and just say, you know, thank you for your service. Now it's time to go get a real job.
Last question before we let you go. Steve Moore speaking with us. Are there things that Donald Trump can do through executive action to cause that effect, or does he need Congress with him?
We've been really operating for the last 15 years on government executive orders. You know, basically when Bush left the office and Obama came in, he changed everything with executive orders, and then Trump reversed Obama's executive orders, and then Biden came in and reversed Trump's executive orders, and now when we come in, we're going to reverse Biden's executive orders. And, you know, we're going to be drilling, we're going to be bringing prices down, we're going to force people to be working if they're going to get government benefits. You have to have a job. We're going to rebuild our military, and of course, most importantly, we're going to get that border secure within about 2 months.
Yeah. Well, a constitutionally focused, aligned Congress sure could help quite a bit for a Trump administration. Yeah. Steve, thank you for being with us today. We always love having you.
All right. Have a great week ahead. Talk to you soon.
Yes. Sounds good. Bye-bye. Steve Moore, Distinguished Fellow in Economics at the Heritage Foundation and a Trump Economic Advisor. His book, Govzilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Those are pretty good examples of that. I mean, pulling back on spending, the amount of spending that we have that is so incredibly bloated. And when you go through, I mean, Rand Paul does that airing of grievances on Festivus.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah,
on
yeah,
Festivus?
Yeah.
You read through that and you're like, I mean, it's Christmas. And you're like, oh, eye roll. I don't even need to care about these things. But then at the same time, you're like, I should care a lot about these things. Pulling back on spending and having somebody who's willing to go in there and do it is important. but it really needs to extend past just the presidency. It really does need to have a broad, I mean, the United States Senate is very much so in play for Republicans to take the majority there. Mm-hmm. I don't really know. We haven't had like the full on Kamala conversation yet, but I really truly am not going to dive headfirst into that until she has the nomination.
That's fair. I mean, like you listen to some of the reporting about it, some of the audio clips I've seen, some of the focus groups that I've seen, people aren't like super sold on her. Now, I know there's another group of people out there saying, well, you don't get another mulligan, you get one do over for an election cycle. I'm like, I don't even know if you get one.
We need to remember that we are already way, way, way past the unprecedented moment in time. Anything goes.
Oh, yeah. And like whenever I hear people say, well, you don't get another do over. It's like you do if you think you're going to keep Trump out of office by doing the do over, because that is number one most important thing on the Democrats' radar at any point is how do we keep this man out of and away from the White House. This is their biggest thing, and they will do whatever it takes to do that.
You know how I love polls.
Love him.
Monday, July 29th polls. President Biden job approval. Rasmussen, 46% approve.
Now
that he's leaving. Still, he's just disapprove plus six. Wow. Wow. President job approval, according to Gallup, 36% approve, 58% disapprove. Rasmussen, who are you talking to? Congressional job approval, 16% approve,
jeez,
according to Gallup. And the direction of the country with Rasmussen, which is interesting. So 46% approve of Joe Biden's job approval, again, knowing now that he's like, I'm out. And the vice president is meeting with all of these people and getting the camera shots and the headlines and everything. Is this the way it's going to be until Election Day? Is Kamala Harris going to just play president until she tries to win the presidency? Because it's not how it works. When the ish hits the fan, and I think that we should all be sitting on the edge of our seats praying to God that it doesn't before Election Day, they go to Joe Biden. At least they're supposed to. And if they know that they're not, if that's been status quo, you got to tell us. It's also treasonous. Because the American people elected Joe Biden. They didn't elect anybody else to be the president of the United States. They did not elect Kamala Harris to be the president or to act as the president when the president is there. You have to go through the process of changing that up if you were going to sidestep the normal process. But anyway, 46, according to that Rasmussen poll, 46% approve of Joe Biden, but 60% say that the direction of the country is on the wrong track. Yeah, not math majors. From this weekend, a Fox News poll has Trump at 50 in Wisconsin over Harris's 49, a tie in Michigan, a tie in Pennsylvania, Minnesota. The fact that they're even reporting on Minnesota right now is encouraging if you're a Trump supporter, but has Harris plus six in Minnesota. So that's likely out of the margin error. These are all Fox News polls. Wisconsin, Trump versus Harris versus Kennedy versus West versus Stein. So that's everybody. Trump and Harris are in a tie at 46. Michigan, Fox News poll, Trump plus two. And that's with everybody in. Pennsylvania with everybody in, Harris plus two. Minnesota with everybody in, Harris plus six. Minnesota straight up Harris, Trump. Harris 50, Trump 40, Harris plus 10. The general election, according to the Wall Street Journal, which honestly, these don't really mean much. I know what it would be like to hear this if you're not on my side. So I get it. But the general election polls should always skew left. So to me, a poll that shows that Donald Trump is in the game on the general election would be very frightening if I were on the left.
Yeah.
And the Wall Street Journal general election Trump versus Harris poll is Trump 49, Harris 47. The Wall Street Journal general election, Trump, Harris, and everybody else, Harris plus one. Trump's in the game.
He's in the game.
That's the key here. So it's very close. All of this to say, Kamala Harris gets a honeymoon period. People are, you get to put all of the fluff out there. And I mean, like, there are a lot of attractive things about Kamala Harris to the people who she wants to court as her voters. She's done a lot. I mean, it makes it even more egregious from where I sit because I'm not one of her voters. She's not out there touting great things that are going to make Annie Fry go, she's fantastic. Like, the more she says about her accomplishments, the more I'm like, because I don't think that her accomplishments are what's best for the country. We have policy differences. And in the same way that Donald Trump comes out and talks about what he did, we just had Steve Moore on talking about what Steve Moore, you know, through his economic advisement to the president when he was president prior to Biden's term. He's championing a lot of these things that he considers to be great successes of the Trump administration. If you're on the left, you're like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. That's just the way politics goes. Considering that the honeymoon factor, that Kamala Harris has taken a trouncing of Joe Biden into a place where Kamala Harris is in the game. Is that the ceiling? Because if that's the ceiling, that's also good news for Trump.
Yeah.
Trump, don't fumble the ball. Let's take a quick break and talk to Tom Homan when we come back. He's the former acting director of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. He's the president and CEO of Border 911. He's also a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. He is one, in my opinion, just my observation every time he speaks, a very BA when it comes to getting the border back under control. And a pleasure to have him on the show. Let's talk to Tom Homan when we come back about the border.
For having the leading role on the border, it's only gotten exponentially worse. These are not right-leaning organizations or media outlets. So what do you understand her role to be? And has the situation on the border improved or worsened?
Yeah, let's be very clear about this, because there has been a lot of mischaracterization. She was not in charge of the border. The Homeland Security Department is in charge of the border. She did do something important, though. She was assigned to conduct diplomacy with Central American countries, knowing that that's part of the bigger picture of what's affecting the border. And you know what? Those Central American countries are among the few countries to see their numbers go down in terms of the source of migrants who are seen at the border.
Pete Buttigieg has an explanation, of course, for, you know, I've explained how I don't think that the victory over discussing whether or not we're going to call Kamala Harris the border czar, that is an unworthy argument to have, because regardless of what you call it, she was terrible at it. And Joe Biden absolutely put her in charge of it. Pete Buttigieg explains it's not on Kamala Harris. It's on the Department of Homeland Security. So we thought, let's talk to Tom Homan, the former acting director of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement and president and CEO of Border 911. Tom, thank you for being with us here today. It's a pleasure to have you back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
When you hear Pete Buttigieg explain away Kamala Harris's responsibility on the results that we've seen in this administration on the border, what's your thought?
Well, first of all, they did declare the borders are. There's 100 tapes out there doing it. And look, you want to say she's not a border czar? Whatever. But she's the vice president. Who's the Secretary of Homeland Security report to? The vice president. And if he wants to stick to that, well, I was just in charge of diplomacy to Central American countries. Okay. How does she do? Well, in 3.5 years, she was in charge of diplomacy for the three Central American countries. That number is around 5 million illegal entries from those three countries. 5 million. Average about 1.4 million a year. So, apparently she didn't do too good. And what they're doing now, they're trying to push this narrative that the border's better off. But what they're not telling you is they're bringing thousands through the port of entry through the CPP-1 app. They're bringing thousands through the CHNV, flying straight into airports. If you add those two programs together, same population of illegal aliens, and add what the border's still catching, and add the gotaways, we're still at historic highs. There's no celebration here at all.
And I mean, if you can, you know, polish the situation enough to try to make her look okay come election day. You can look at what Kamala Harris has said about what we should do with the people who are here. She doesn't consider people who have come here illegally to be criminals. What do you think a Kamala Harris presidency would result in for the people who have come here illegally?
Let's remember who she is. First of all, she compared Immigration Customs Enforcement agents to the KKK, okay? She vilified and slandered the men of the horse patrol and the border patrol, saying they whipped black people and they were racist. Again, false. Investigation proved they didn't whip anybody. She, as a senator, she supported sanctuary cities. As the attorney general of California, she supported sanctuary cities. Sanctuaries are criminals. This is who we're dealing with. And why did Joe Biden put her in charge of the border? Because he knows she's not about border security. She doesn't like ICE. She doesn't like border patrol. Let's put someone in there we're not going to fix it. This administration doesn't want to fix the problem. This isn't mismanagement. This isn't incompetence. Open borders by design. He ran on open borders. You got to give him credit. He kept his promise. And Kamala Harris is the perfect person to make sure they will succeed in maintaining open borders. But if she becomes president, first thing you're going to see is a mass amnesty program for tens of millions of people who enter the country illegally. Now, you got to understand, all these people coming across the border, 8 million people released under the Biden administration, 9 out of 10 will get an order of removal. That's based on immigration court data. That's not my numbers. That's court data. 9 out of 10 will lose their case because they simply don't qualify for asylum to be ordered removed. But who's going to leave? Who's going to actually obey that court order when they can just hide out long enough and Kamala Harris will give you amnesty? This is rewarding illegal behavior. It's just going to feed the fire, flame the get the flames, throwing gas on a fire. It's just going to make things worse. So this, if she becomes president, you think things are bad now on the border? Hold on tight. Then we'll get a hell of a lot worse.
President and CEO of Border 911, Tom Homan with us. He's also the former acting director of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We understand that to be ICE. You know, Tom, when I hear you explaining the direction Kamala Harris would take this border problem, it's a crisis that most bipartisan Americans see it as a crisis. When I think about, you know, you can go Trump or you can go Harris, this might be the most, the largest departure of directions that the country would go in should you choose one or the other. What does a Trump presidency look like for the border should he become the president once again?
Okay, so be clear, I'm speaking as Tom Homan, the ICE director. Border 9 was a 501c3. I can't be political, okay. So I'm not speaking for Border 911.
Understood.
But the bottom line is, Trump is proven. He was the most secure border in my lifetime. I started in 1984 as a border patrol agent. I've been doing this for 6 different presidents. I've seen policies work. I've seen policies fail. President Trump's success was unprecedented. Illegal immigration was at a 45-year low. Illegal immigration was decreased by 83% to 90%, depending on what time frame you looked at. Within 90 days, Joe Biden took the most secure border of my lifetime and unsecured on purpose. We went from the most secure borders to historic illegal immigration. So if President Trump gets back in the White House, it's going to be easy. We can secure the border. It's going to take us about 90 days. We simply turn on the Remain in Mexico program. We turn on the third safe country agreements. We stop catch and release. We continue the wall. All 4 things were game changers with Trump administration. We just go back to that same recipe, but finish what we started. And as far as, you know, those who demands they release the United States, 9 out of 10 will be order removed. We need to find them. We need to remove them because that's what the law requires. Unless there's consequences for entering this country illegally, which is a crime, unless there's a consequence for ignoring a federal court order, it's never going to end. So we got to have consequences. If you and I ignore a federal court order, we'd be in prison.
Right. Yeah, completely. What you mentioned the agents that Kamala Harris repeatedly insults and disrespects. Is there a staffing problem right now with ICE, with our Border Patrol agents, that should Donald Trump become the president once again, would people be interested in signing up when maybe right now they won't be because they've been disrespected so much?
Yeah, exactly right. Border Patrol can't hire. I mean, Border Patrol's offered, I think last time I saw, a $20,000 signing bonus. They can't hire because who wants to go and it'll be take a sworn oath to be a federal law enforcement officer and perform national security duties on the southern border? But when you get in there, you're going down there, you're a tourist agent, you're an Uber driver, you're a taxi driver, you're simply processing people, releasing them into the United States, many times delivering them to the very people who pay to have them smuggled, which is a felony.
That's outrageous.
So in ICE, look, the morale of ICE border patrols are all-time low. I talk to hundreds of these guys every month. If Trump comes back, number one, they'll get to do the job they took the oath to do. They'll get to be federal law enforcement officers and actually enforce the law and protect this country. These men and women signed up to protect the country. They didn't sign up to process people to release them illegally to the United States, like the Biden administration has been doing for 3.5 years.
I want to ask you one last question briefly about what is taking place in Venezuela. We saw elections. Maduro, he says he wins re-election. Everybody's saying that he's stealing it once again. What are your thoughts on what took place in Venezuela yesterday?
It scares me. That's what comes to the United States. Look, The Democrats has voted against voter ID laws. Who the hell doesn't think when you go to vote for a president of the United States, you shouldn't show an ID to vote? I mean, I had to show the ID the other day at Will Call to get sports tickets. I had to show ID to at a bar. I'm 62 years old. I had to show ID to get a beer the other day.
Yeah.
So, look, it's racist to say people can't get IDs, and, you know, whether it's the black community, Hispanic community, can't get ID. Anybody can get ID. But, you know, and so not requiring voter ID, not making sure our elections are solid and concrete and every vote counts. Because when someone that votes that's not supposed to vote illegally votes, that casts your vote out. Every vote, legal vote, should be counted. Everybody should show some sort of ID. And what happened to Venezuela? Look, it's without voter control, that stuff will happen.
Yeah, it's something that everybody should be paying attention to. Tom Homan, thank you for your time today. We're really grateful for your expertise on the issue.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. He is the former acting director of the United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement. He's also a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Grateful to have Tom Homan with us here today on X at Real Tom Homan. Go tell him hi. Let's take a quick break. We'll get Ryan Wiggins back in studio. We want to remind you also of that YouTube live chat poll for today. Are you watching the 2024 Olympics? Yes or no? What do you think? We've got a lot of people reacting and leaving some comments. Grant said, even though the opening was absolutely disgusting, I love the actual sports that are there, that are the Olympics. You agree with Grant? A lot of you do. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back. Yeah, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Our YouTube poll for today is, are you watching the 2024 Olympics? Yes or no? I don't think that if the Olympic opening ceremony happened, that I would mention the Olympics at all. It's kind of one of those things, if I come home and my kids are watching it, I wouldn't be like, get this crap off the TV. But I wouldn't be the one who's like, hey, guys, we got to gather around and watch the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Prior to the opening ceremonies, mine would have been a no if I have to choose between yes or no. Not on purpose.
And mine is still a no, but when it's on, you know, if you're in a bar or something and it's on,
you
I'm,
know how,
I'm totally
you know
watching
how the
it.
Three of us are.
You know, we go to a bar. I mean, we're just going there to drink. But if it happens to be on, yeah, I'll watch some TV.
What is the equivalent of the bar where we would all be?
The type of bar where we would be?
No.
It would be like a juice bar.
None of us are going to a bar.
No.
We're not even cool enough to go to a juice bar, so I don't know what kind of bar we would go to.
No, we're not. I'm just saying there's got to be a... We don't go to the bar. We go to the...
The grill. We go to the grill part of the bar grill. You know that's true.
We're there for the half price apps.
Yeah. Hey, it's Thursday. Half price wings. I'm there. But if it's on somewhere, I am watching it. It's entertaining to watch a sport, especially sports you don't usually watch. And, you know, you root for your country and it's fun. I have no desire to seek it out. I have no time to sit and watch the Olympics.
Is your thought on the Olympics and your participation or lack of participation, is it in any way, shape, or form affected by the opening ceremonies?
Yeah, a little bit. It makes me more aware that they're happening, first of all. So in that sense, they succeeded. But it also makes me want to not support it. You know, my dad was talking about this and we were just like, but how do they even know you're watching it at all anyway? Unless you're wearing a meter, nobody knows. So you're not hurting them by not watching it unless they know. So you kind of nailed my sentiment in your first segment when you were saying it's like this collective eye roll about this attention grabbing nonsense that people are doing.
When you watch it, I mean, is it shocking for a second? And then you're like, well, of course.
That's exactly my reaction. Exactly.
You know what would have been shocking? Is if they would have come out and actually depicted the Lord's Supper and been like, Jesus is Lord.
That's what, yeah.
Everybody been like, whoa.
What?
And then imagine how mad people would be.
They just quickly sweep over like a landscape and one of them is like Golgotha and you're like, oh, Christ is Lord. And they just pass you real quick and you go, whoa, what was that? That would shock me. This does not shock me. This is really kind of what I expect from some random Western European Olympics.
Are you watching the Olympics? Yes or no?
No.
And really not much of a change. It's hard to know.
I wasn't anyway.
Brad?
I really only like sports when they're live. And the time zones don't work out, so I'm not watching them. I'm not going to watch them on replay.
Brad's got a time zone conflict.
I like that. I like that. Different take.
I don't like watching recorded sports. If I know that a game is happening live, I will pick up, and if I miss half the game, I miss half the game, but I'll start up right where it starts. And
That's why, as much as I love Kurt Russell, I did not watch Miracle. I was like, I know how this ends. I'm not going to watch this.
I just wish you all at home could watch Ryan think of this joke.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, meet me right here.
I'm trying to get in. I got to get this joke in.
Right here.
Brad, stop talking.
Stop. It's my turn. We only got till two.
I got jokes.
Do you feel as though the intention of the Olympic ceremony opening show was specifically to mock Christianity?
Ooh.
Pastor.
I think maybe it was. I think that it was. It seems to be in vogue right now.
Here is a follow-up question, which I want you to think broadly about this. If the intention was to mock Christianity, I mean, to me, as a Christian, and it's important to identify myself as a Christian when I say this, because if you're like hearing me say this and you're not a Christian and then you're disagreeing with me, we just have different foundations. Everything is either created to glorify God mm-hmm. or to mock God. And there are very few things that come across your television that are set to glorify God.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some things are a little more on the nose. If you set aside Christianity in this conversation and you look at what was depicted there, I'm not an expert in Jewish theology. I'm not an expert in Islam, but I don't really feel like those religions would look at that and be like, this is glorifying Yahweh, Allah, other God here. Am I wrong?
Nah. I agree with your assessment, because I say this too, that really all things are spiritually based. But if you want to get past the like really foundational motivations for people in general, this, when they got together and said, let's come up with something for the Olympic opening ceremony, I think what they probably said was, let's do something edgy that's going to get us a lot of attention and not have any consequences.
I don't know who these people are.
Exactly.
There's nobody who participated in that I'm like, I want to know that person's name. I want to know where that person does more of that. It's just the Olympics. I mean, you really made a bold statement on behalf of a platform that's going to absorb the positive and the negative reaction alike, and then you kind of get to walk away. In that instance, it's kind of lame. But we've talked about Christian faith, we've talked about other faiths, make it completely secular. Is it possible to look at that as somebody who has no faith walk whatsoever? This is it. You're on earth until you're not, and then you turn to dust. Are you looking at that going, gosh, that was great, kids? Like, you DVR'd it, and it's so great, and you're like calling the whole family in. I mean, is that really what a secular moral society wants for their culture to be consumed in the broadest of senses?
Yeah, I think there is a section of culture. I don't want to say American culture, but we'll say Western culture.
I don't think it's non-American.
No, that would really celebrates that stuff, because it's that boogeyman that they've created out of what used to be sort of conservatism / Christian / traditional America that doesn't exist anymore, that they keep thinking they need to knock down.
It's the foil they need.
Yeah. And so they keep coming after it. When they do, they feel like they're accomplishing something, and like they're progressive. That's progressivism. And it's really, I hate to say this because I want to be more like, we're on the radio, I want to be more bombastic about it. It's just lame. It's when I watch that and I think the Olympic opening ceremony is an opportunity for people to do big artistic things that are on a global stage. If that's what you chose, among other things, you just suck. Like, you're boring. You're doing the same thing that's been you're fighting the same battles that everybody's already fought and basically won. You're just boring. And when I see that, I roll my eyes for the same reason we were just talking about, because you've seen this kind of stuff so much that it doesn't surprise you anymore. And you almost expect that on a global stage, when we're celebrating globalism and global community, you're like, of course, that's what they're going to put on there.
What's interesting is whenever you generally watch Olympic opening ceremonies, it's a celebration of two things. It's a celebration of the athletes that are there, and then it's also a celebration of the host country. So, Annie, you talked about the Greek statues at the Athens Olympic opening ceremony. I mentioned Mr. Bean at London's, you know.
You should more.
There was, you know, you go back to Beijing, and I remember that they celebrated Chinese history in that, all of that stuff. And so France is like, hey, check us out. And this is what is, like, this has nothing to do with France. Like, if you're talking about a celebration of Bacchus, the Roman god of hedonism, like, that's not France.
Wait, you sure? Rome's not in France?
You know, it really was. It's just a, like, hey, let's see if we can just get away with the shock value of it all. And who can we twist the knife at, and who can we needle and get away with at it? And it's like, all right, we can needle the Christians. Let's do that, and we'll make something really shocking.
There's another possibility here, though. And this one's way less exciting to talk about. But if you live in a world that is super consumed with this LGBTQ plus activism, acceptance, you know, DEI is a strong, good thing, so on and so forth. If DEI was as good of what they said it was, Kamala Harris would be saying to the world, I am a DEI hire. And if they wouldn't have given somebody like me a chance to do this, you wouldn't have all of the successes I've brought to you. Go with that one. But you know, if you live in that small world, those people, there are people in Christian spaces who do not understand the world that exists that mm-hmm. was displayed on the Olympic ceremonies. And there are people who live in that world who do not understand. They're not exposed to people who are, you know, Midwestern conservative Christians like we are. There is a lack of understanding there. And what we've been told from the other side, which first started with the word tolerance, which was big in the 90s, maybe even the 80s. The idea of tolerance, you were supposed to tolerate people who weren't like you. You're supposed to tolerate them. They're not even tolerant of us. And we're not like them. And we don't need to be like them. And if you were going to be inclusive, you would at minimum tolerate Christians and not do things that were in direct opposition of them. But they don't even, like, I don't think that they even really understand that people like us exist and that we really are committed to it. Like, it's really who we are. They tend to think in the activist world that we exist only to hate them. Like, that's the only purpose of somebody who walks our life is to hate them. And it's just emphatically not true. And there's an essence of ignorance that exists on both sides where you don't understand the other person to the point sometimes I think you forget that they even exist. And then you do something like mock the Last Supper and you're like, why are they mad? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Go vote in the YouTube poll. Let us know if you're watching the Olympics. We'll be right back. Since Grant said, even though the opening was absolutely disgusting, I love the actual sports that are there. That are the Olympics. You agree with Grant? A lot of you do. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back. Yeah, welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Our YouTube poll for today is, are you watching the 2024 Olympics, yes or no? I don't think that if the Olympic opening ceremony happened, that I would mention the Olympics at all. It's kind of one of those things, if I come home and my kids are watching it, I wouldn't be like, get this crap off the TV. But I wouldn't be the one who's like, hey guys, we got to gather around and watch the Olympics.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Prior to the opening ceremonies, mine would have been a no if I have to choose between yes or no. Not on purpose.
And mine is still a no, but when it's on, you know, if you're in a bar or something and it's on,
you
know, I'm totally watching it.
The three of us are.
You know, we go to a bar. I mean, we're just going there to drink. But if it happens to be on, yeah, I'll watch some TV.
What is the equivalent of the bar where we would all be?
The type of bar where we would be?
No.
It would be like a juice bar.
None of us are going to a bar.
No.
We're not even cool enough to go to a juice bar, so I don't know what kind of bar we would go to.
No, we're not. I'm just saying there's got to be a... We don't go to the bar. We go to the...
The grill. We go to the grill part of the bar and grill. You know that's true.
We're there for the half price apps.
Yeah. Hey, it's Thursday. Half price wings. I'm there. But if it's on somewhere, I am watching it. It's entertaining to watch a sport, especially sports you don't usually watch. And, you know, you root for your country and it's fun. I have no desire to seek it out. I have no time to sit and watch the Olympics.
Is your thought on the Olympics and your participation or lack of participation, is it in any way, shape, or form affected by the opening ceremonies?
Yeah, a little bit. It makes me more aware that they're happening, first of all. So in that sense, they succeeded. But it also makes me want to not support it. You know, my dad was talking about this, and we were just like, but how do they even know you're watching it at all anyway? Unless you're wearing a meter, nobody knows. So you're not hurting them by not watching it unless they know. So you kind of nailed my sentiment in your first segment when you were saying it's like this collective eye roll about this attention grabbing nonsense that people are doing.
When you watch it, I mean, is it shocking for a second? And then you're like, well, of course.
That's exactly my reaction. Exactly.
You know what would have been shocking? Is if they would have come out and actually depicted the Lord's Supper and been like, Jesus is Lord.
That's what, yeah.
Everybody would have been like, whoa. What? And then imagine how mad people would be.
They just quickly sweep over like a landscape, and one of them is like Golgotha, and you're like, oh, Christ is Lord. And they just pass you real quick, and you go, whoa, what was that? That would shock me. This does not shock me. This is really kind of what I expect from some random Western European Olympics.
Are you watching the Olympics, yes or no?
No.
And really not much of a change. It's hard to know.
I wasn't anyway.
Brad?
I really only like sports when they're live and the time zones don't work out, so I'm not watching them. I'm not going to watch them on replay.
Brad's got a time zone conflict.
I like that. I like that. Different take.
I don't like watching recorded sports. If I know that a game is happening live, I will pick up, and if I miss half the game, I miss half the game, but I'll start up right where it starts.
And that's why, as much as I love Kurt Russell, I did not watch Miracle. I was like, I know how to send it. I'm not going to watch this.
I just wish you all at home could watch Ryan think of this joke.
Oh, yeah. And I'm like, meet me right here.
I'm trying to get in. I got to get this joke in.
Right here.
Brad, stop talking.
Stop. It's my turn. We only got till 2.
I got jokes.
Do you feel as though the intention of the Olympic ceremony opening show was specifically to mock Christianity?
Ooh.
Pastor.
I think maybe it was. I think that it was. It seems to be in vogue right now.
Here is a follow-up question, which I want you to think broadly about this. If the intention was to mock Christianity, I mean, to me, as a Christian, and it's important to identify myself as a Christian when I say this, because if you're like hearing me say this and you're not a Christian and then you're disagreeing with me, we just have different foundations. Everything is either created to glorify God or to mock God. And there are very few things that come across your television that are set to glorify God.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe some things are a little more on the nose. If you set aside Christianity in this conversation and you look at what was depicted there, I'm not an expert in Jewish theology. I'm not an expert in Islam, but I don't really feel like those religions would look at that and be like, this is glorifying Yahweh, Allah, other God here. Am I wrong?
Nah. I agree with your assessment, because I say this too, that really all things are spiritually based. But if you want to get past the like really foundational motivations for people in general, this, when they got together and said, let's come up with something for the Olympic opening ceremony, I think what they probably said was, let's do something edgy that's going to get us a lot of attention and not have any consequences.
I don't know who these people are.
Exactly.
There's nobody who participated in that I'm like, I want to know that person's name. I want to know where that person does more of that. It's just the Olympics. I mean, you really made a bold statement on behalf of a platform that's going to absorb the positive and the negative reaction alike, and then you kind of get to walk away. In that instance, it's kind of lame. But take out, okay, so we've talked about Christian faith, we've talked about other faiths, make it completely secular. Is it possible to look at that as somebody who has no faith walk whatsoever? This is it. You're on earth until you're not, and then you turn to dust. Are you looking at that going, gosh, that was great, kids? Like, you DVR'd it, and it's so great, and you're like calling the whole family in. I mean, is that really what a secular moral society wants for their culture to be consumed in the broadest of senses?
Yeah, I think there is a section of culture. I don't want to say American culture, but we'll say Western culture.
I don't think it's non-American.
No, that what really celebrates that stuff, because it's that boogeyman that they've created out of what used to be sort of conservatism / Christian / traditional America that doesn't exist anymore, that they keep thinking they need to knock down.
It's the foil they need.
Yeah, and so they keep coming after it. When they do, they feel like they're accomplishing something, and like they're progressive. That's progressivism. And it's really, I hate to say this because I want to be more, like, we're on the radio, I want to be more bombastic about it. It's just lame. It's when I watch that and I think the Olympic opening ceremony is an opportunity for people to do big artistic things that are on a global stage. If that's what you chose, among other things, you just suck. Like, you're boring. You're doing the same thing that's been, you're fighting the same battles that everybody's already fought and basically won. You're just boring. And when I see that, I roll my eyes for the same reason we were just talking about, because you've seen this kind of stuff so much that it doesn't surprise you anymore. And you almost expect that on a global stage, when we're celebrating globalism and global community, you're like, of course, that's what they're going to put on there.
What's interesting is whenever you generally watch Olympic opening ceremonies, it's a celebration of two things. It's a celebration of the athletes that are there, and then it's also a celebration of the host country. So, Annie, you talked about the Greek statues at the Athens Olympic opening ceremony. I mentioned Mr. Bean at London's, you know.
You should more.
There was, you know, you go back to Beijing, and I remember that they celebrated Chinese history and that, all of that stuff. And so France is like, hey, check us out. And this is what is, like, this has nothing to do with France. Like, if you're talking about a celebration of Bacchus, the Roman god of hedonism, like, that's not France.
Wait, you sure? Rome's not in France?
Yeah, it really was. It's just a, like, hey, let's see if we can just get away with the shock value of it all. And who can we twist the knife at, and who can we needle and get away with at it? And it's like, all right, we can needle the Christians. Let's do that, and we'll make something really shocking.
There's another possibility here, though. And this one's way less exciting to talk about. But if you live in a world that is super consumed with this LGBTQ plus activism, acceptance, you know, DEI is a strong, good thing, so on and so forth. If DEI was as good of what they said it was, Kamala Harris would be saying to the world, I am a DEI hire, and if they wouldn't have given somebody like me a chance to do this, you wouldn't have all of the successes I've brought to you. Go with that one. But, you know, if you live in that small world, those people, there are people in Christian spaces who do not understand the world that exists that mm-hmm. was displayed on the Olympic ceremonies. And there are people who live in that world who do not understand. They're not exposed to people who are, you know, Midwestern conservative Christians like we are. There is a lack of understanding there. And what we've been told from the other side, which first started with the word tolerance, which was big in the 90s, maybe even the 80s. The idea of tolerance, you were supposed to tolerate people who weren't like you. You're supposed to tolerate them. They're not even tolerant of us. And we're not like them. And we don't need to be like them. And if you were going to be inclusive, you would at minimum tolerate Christians and not do things that were in direct opposition of them. But they don't even, like, I don't think that they even really understand that people like us exist and that we really are committed to it. Like, it's really who we are. They tend to think in the activist world that we exist only to hate them. Like, that's the only purpose of somebody who walks our life is to hate them. And it's just emphatically not true. And there's an essence of ignorance that exists on both sides where you don't understand the other person to the point sometimes I think you forget that they even exist. And then you do something like mock the Last Supper and you're like, why are they mad? I mean, I don't know. Maybe. Go vote in the YouTube poll. Let us know if you're watching the Olympics. We'll be right back.